Hi, welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the weekly podcast where my guests and I explore what it means and takes to be a kick-ass and kind adult these days. Expect deep, real and raw, as no topic is out of bounds. We want lives and businesses that are profitable, sustainable and fun. We want lives that feel as good on the inside as they perhaps look on the outside. And that means adulting the fuck up. I'm Ebony Allard. I'm an award-winning coach, author, and speaker. And if you're ready to implement, go to n2n365.club. For now, though, let's get on with the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode. Today, I am joined by Reverend Gail Loveshock, who is an interfaith minister and teacher. She helps people to cross thresholds, mature, and thrive. She's also a wonderful friend of mine, and I'm so happy that we get to have this conversation.
I know. And where we are in the world as well. It's so great. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming and for every time you share space with me, I feel honored. And so thank you.
My pleasure. Truly my pleasure. Yeah.
What does being an adult or adulting mean for you?
What does being an adult mean for me? More and more these days, it means a very joy-filled level of taking personal responsibility that really allows me to be who I want to be in the world. And I used to shy away from this idea of responsibility because I just thought it sounded terrible. You know, I just thought it sounded like something I didn't want to do. And then I realized that I could move away from just feeling as if I was sort of missing out on something or as if somebody had more of an idea of what was going on in their life. And actually, by taking responsibility for myself, I could decide how I felt. You know, I could decide, I started to really take what I thought about myself and my life quite seriously. And, I choose what I think about, choose how I feel. And I suddenly realized there was quite a lot of unlocking that could happen personally and professionally by maturing, by growing up, not in a way that cost me any of my teenage genius, because she could come with me, which is brilliant, not in a way that cost me any of my Italian moments or what we might think of as toddler tantrums.
I love that.
But really just in a way that was very like the Russian doll, and that I could cascade all of the versions of myself that could tumble like jewels inside me, and I could let my life glimmer. You know, I could let the sunlight bounce off of myself just by this idea of really embracing being a powerful person that inhabits the world adult.
I love that so much. And I'm curious, kind of at what point that happened, whether it was a switch flick, whether it was a gradual thing, and also from a very nosy point of view, how that fitted into the interfaith minister, reverend part of your journey, because that's not who you've always been. It's not how I met you, for example.
Yeah, no, I think it's a perfect question, and they are absolutely all interlinked. For me, there was, I think I was a minister long before I was ordained, if that makes sense. You know, we are who we are. It's in our bones. And there was this depth that I was being invited to meet, and the way that I wanted to meet that spiritual fluidity, if you will, turned out, most surprising of all to me, to be in training as an interfaith minister, and then being ordained. And as an interfaith minister, I minister to all faiths and none, and that's the whole point. It's about it's about a world of deep inclusivity and celebration. I believe everybody has a right to the ceremony or celebration or honouring of their life as they wish. And that, when I really started to explore that, I realised that many of the rites of passage I had perhaps moved through in my life had been both unconscious, because we have lived in a cycle of socialization in many, many areas around the world. And then when I started to explore, maybe 3-4 years ago, really what the idea of a cycle of liberation might be, that interfaith ministry sort of got in the middle of a really interesting sandwich of my life. And there was definitely days when that sandwich had bits of sand and grit and what is that in there? You know, all of that side of things. And what I definitely didn't want was to lose my spark or my humour or my cheekiness or my mischievousness when I walked through what One Spirit Interfaith Foundation, my organization that I trained with and that I'm with, you know, I didn't want to lose those parts of myself by being ordained, and I didn't want to develop some sort of strange minister tone where we just stand, you know, and you know, I didn't want to do any of those things. I wanted to be able to still throw fucks around and things like that. But like, holy shit, your life is in turmoil. Let's sit in sacred council and have a conversation about that, you know, or yeah, that does suck, or oh my God, that's hilarious. Tell me more. So for me, everything absolutely dovetailed, and there was just this idea at the same time, as the more I put down modern myths, again, that have been fed to me through forms actually of toxic femininity, of toxic patriarchy, of oppressive systems of how a woman ought to behave or a woman ought to show up. And certainly being, you know, someone that presents as a white Glaswegian Scottish interfaith minister, there are many expectations as to how that should, in inverted commas, sound or look like. But for me, I just realized that the more I came within, and that was certainly, interfaith training was an absolute excavation of everything that I thought I was, everything I thought I should be, everything I thought I wanted. And I was able to be in what we might think of as the underworld, as Inanna spent time in, and just spend time with gatekeepers and hand things over that were really no longer in service. But you see, the thing was, nobody had told me previously that in handing over things which no longer fitted, actually what I got in exchange was what I describe as life couture. I started to get a, you know, it was bespoke.
Oh,
like, why does nobody talk about this?
Gosh, I love that as a concept. Mm-hmm. Such a beautiful way of describing, because so often when I hear about these journeys, right, whether it is an initiation, so I've been spending a lot of time at the moment talking about watery initiations versus fiery initiations. So what's the difference between walking into the fire versus walking into the ocean?
Yes.
What's the difference between a kind of quite yang, masculine initiation around authority and the external versus, you know, what happens when we go internally and face ourselves really on a deep level in that, and kind of that mother wound stuff. Every time I explore this with people, there's this idea that you have to give stuff up, mm-hmm. let go. And no one, like you said, not very many people talk about what you are given in exchange, right? Because it isn't just sacrifice after sacrifice with no reward.
No, please may it not be, absolutely not. And but again, I think that is one of the great modern myths, absolutely. And many, many times when I'm sitting in what I refer to as sacred council with people, which is my private practice, my one-to-one practice, you know, I'll say to them, enough now, stop. Like, there is nothing, you cannot empty yourself anymore. Like, you're empty, you know, the well of you is empty. There's nothing to draw from or drink from. You know, words I often use are, I really invite everyone to slow down and to sip and to savor. So I love when you're talking about the initiation of either fire or water. Yeah, like, what does it, what, because I talk about water so often, like, what does it feel for us to be the clay, the water that we pour upon the clay? What does it feel like for us to be the potter? What does it feel like for us to be the artist? And instead of this idea that we are a rock that we take a chisel and a hammer to, because again, that is incredibly, it's incredibly masculine. And of course, I love the idea that we can see the vision inside the rock. Well, that's great for people that can see that, but personally, I like a good soaking. So So you're gonna find me in a bath more than you're gonna find me with a hammer, you know, at any point. And it's always been that way. And absolutely, I believe we have an enormous opportunity to also to initiate, activate, enliven, and choose aliveness through the, particularly if we present as women and we identify as women, that the heroine's journey, you know, as termed by Maureen Murdoch, is about coming in and down and through. The hero's journey, as termed by Joseph Campbell, is about going out and finding and then sitting at the foot of the goddess or the priestess. But we are, as women, the goddess, the priestess, the great mother, the representatives of nourishment, relationship development. Even when we talk about things as boundaries in this idea of life couture, actually, it's just a very simple, does this bring me pleasure? Does this not? But if I've exhausted myself because I'm going out all the time, out of my mind, out of my imagination, out of my very being, I'm not going to be able to know what a good fit is. And so then again, we empty. But actually, you know, again, the myth of Inanna, when she meets Suresh Kagal, she's given up, willingly giving up all of her ideas of worldly clothing and belonging for something that is transformative, alchemical, so that when she emerges, when she comes through, she is reborn. And that's a part of the practice that we forget. We think we have to give everything up and then we die, and we will die. It is inevitable for all of us. These bodies will complete for sure. But there's something much more beautiful about reminding us that there is rebirth. You know, there's rebirth, and life can fit really beautifully. But we just haven't been talking about it very much. There's old ways that have been edited out. There's teachers that are lost for sure. And then there are definitely people who are remembering, you know, remembering some profound knowing, which comes from alignment, which is the connection to what I call our inner being, or our inner wise one, our inner medicine woman, our heart, whatever language feels good for you.
I'd love, this is very personal, but I also think it's appropriate for us to talk about. I'd love for us to talk about the priestess, because I see a resurgence of the word at the moment. And I have known most of my life that I am a priestess, and recently the name the Priestess of Alchemy found me, and trust me when I tell you, it is not a name I would have chosen for myself, right? Like, these things are not, right? We don't go, oh yes, that sounds fun. And yet I see a lot of people stepping into this title at the moment, in the same way as coach became this thing for a little while. There's a lot of priestesses around. And a few months ago, actually about 8 or 9 months ago now, I was lucky enough to meet a wonderful priest who's a friend of mine, and he stayed the night, and he's a gay priest who enjoys gin. And so instantly my mind was blown, right? Like all illusions shattered about what it should be and how he should present in the world. And so over a few gins, we talked about his work and his life. And the more I listened, I realized that he was describing what I do. And I'm like, oh, I'm a I'd given myself this title, or I'd received this title of priestess. But for some reason, I had not put priest and priestess together. I just hadn't. And so I think that that's really interesting. And when you talk about language lost and teachers lost, what happened to all the priestesses? It's interesting, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I really honour that moment, that ding moment, when we realise the feminine of priest is priestess, and yet we're not invited into the priestesshood in the same way we're invited into the priesthood. you know, we're not invited into ministry as a priestess. We're invited into ministry. You know, and part of the reason I use Reverend, which is absolutely within my gift to be able to do that, is because it is about my having a reverence for life, which absolutely sits with the Great Mother, which absolutely sits as a daughter who speaks the mother tongue, which is the soul to soul, heart to heart, which is the absolutely the priestesshood. You know, and there are many reasons priestesses essentially went into hiding, you know, and didn't write things down. Ours is an oral tradition, and we are again trying to remember that mother tongue. We've spoken the father tongue for centuries. Organized religion has its place in the world, and yet at the same time it muted many people who were in relationship to priestesshood and all that acts and lives within. And it was also what has, I would say, almost neutered women particularly. We talk about numbing, but actually I think there is a prepubescent neutering that can happen when young women move into their sexuality and their sensuality, essentially their blood initiation. When they're moving from and through that place, but there is no there's no menarche awareness, there's no celebration, there's no elder there to say welcome woman, welcome young woman. So, you know, for me also in my ministry and in my reverence for priestesses and for the priestesshood is this idea of may we bring the ceremonial rites of passage, may we elevate them to a place of profound respect and knowing that they are needed, because we cannot simply have, for example, birth, baby blessing, christening, marriage and or divorce, and then your funeral. Those can't be the only ceremony. And
please.
In a retirement party, maybe, you know, if you fancy retiring. There's so much more richness. So much more richness. And indeed, you know, that's part of also, you know, as a minister, as a reverend, you know, that loves whiskey, swears, and has a great, you know, sense of humor, I like to think, thanks very much, you know, and you know, we'll say, well, there is some bullshit going on in the world, so let's call that out. What are we doing about that? You know, what are we doing about that? Where are we changing things? So again, that memory, that knowing that absolutely, you know, if we think about Sumerian time, Babylonian, if we think about Atlantis, if we think early Africa, if we think early lands now known as America, Australia, New Zealand, priests and priestesses side by side, medicine men, medicine women side by side, threshold crossers, soul midwives, all available. Now sort of tainted with that slight, oh, I don't know if I can take that seriously, but actually it is the original way. They're the careers in inverted commas that we are leaning towards, and that's as we rebirth ourselves right now. Those are the roles that are needed more than ever. We need encouragement and to feel safe and to have brave spaces, and that's just such an important time to again know that those pathways are possible. They might feel very strange and peculiar, but your bones will remember.
And I, you know, I really see, coming back round to how we started this conversation in terms of responsibility, you know, for me, I see it as a responsibility. And similarly to you, it has there's a seriousness to that, right? Like I take my life, my role, the feelings in my bones, the images, pictures, stories that land in my mind that come from, you know, ancestors and dreams very, very seriously. And at the same time, for me, you know, people hear me talk about this a lot, but the word maven was given to me by my grandma in a dream. And it's an old Hebrew word. And my grandma was a Jewish woman who came to me in a dream and handed me this word. And at the time, no one else was using it. And as I did this research, I understood that it meant an expert by experience. And the more research I did on the word maven, I learned that it also meant holding the ability to hold more than one truth in the palm of one hand. And so that has been my work in the world, really helping people see both sides of the coin, both seeing the shadow and the light, recognizing that they have a choice, and also being able to hold responsibility and fun in the same hand.
Yes. Oh my gosh, 100%. Yes, absolutely. The balance, the cosmic, the human, the earthly balance, absolutely. It's us standing in the middle of the infinity symbol of that number eight, if you will. Oh my God, yes. And actually, I think that's such a good point, because I think for me, and I know the more responsibility that I take, the more fun I have, you know, because actually what I've done and what I'm doing by taking responsibility is that actually each morning I'm consciously, purposely, internally and externally saying, I choose myself today. I choose this bed that I'm lying in. I choose this man that's beside me, this cat who takes up more space than either of us.
Ah, yes.
You know, and so I'm living my life in and on purpose. And that is that, you know, particularly as women, but absolutely for everybody, but being a self-sourced woman or being a self-sourced person, a person that again is connected to the inner well of them, who has taken responsibility, who knows what's true, who has fun, who is in their creativity, their intuition, their genius, their glory, their spontaneity, their absolutely, that's a holy hell full body, yes. Tis actually to become the most endangered and feared creature on the planet. A fully self-sourced person is something that does not abide by systems. They unlock ancient systems that lead to more evolution. And again, that's where we are. And that's also why priestesses were rare, because they were totally self-sourced. They didn't need anybody, you know, we weren't going to, you know, a brick building and a brick altar and a brick man to pray to source. We are source.
And which is quite frankly terrifying, isn't it? I mean, don't get me wrong. It's also, we were talking before we came live. I was like, I like myself. Don't know when that happened. Been trying to do it my whole life. Stopped trying to do it and it happened.
Right? Yes.
And that is it's an incredibly wonderful place, but also, again, we're not taught that it's acceptable or that it's allowed or that it's okay. You know, we are, as soon as you become self-sourced, you're a rebel or you're wrong or you're an outlaw, or it's very interesting. I find it fascinating.
Yeah. And again, it must be a daily choice, really, from a place of fun, I think, as well. You know, and I think that's the great gift of being, you know, being an adult and being a grown up, is that you can say, oh my God, this is bullshit. Why am I still doing it? I don't want to do this anymore. You know, and be one of those parents that doesn't say to their children, well, when you grow up, you can make all the decisions you want, but right now you're in my house. But instead, how about being a parent that's like, do you know what? That's a great idea. Let's have a chat about it.
I actually think that's one of the biggest gifts that my parents gave me, is that they, you know, they didn't, from the get-go, if someone looked at them and said, who's this then? My dad would say, she has a voice, ask her. You know, and I think that's wonderful. And so much of my sovereignty was modelled to me and gifted to me. And in a way, that's what I see our job as, right, is modelling this self-sourcedness, because it's so difficult to tell. Like, it doesn't work when you tell someone. It works much better when you show them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so true. It's like, let me walk my talk, is that, you know, absolutely. And, you know, we are bombarded with images of what success in inverted commas looks like. But what I know to be true is, you know, if I'm rested, hydrated, fun, having fun, creating, swimming in the loch, cooking, spending time, you know, with the people that I love, that I choose to have in my life because I love them. But actually, if I'm experiencing satisfaction, because so many of us live with deep dissatisfaction for such a long time, and it moves into neurosis, it moves into depression, it moves into disconnection, and we just can't quite put our finger on what it is. But actually it's deep dissatisfaction with where we are, because we've been programmed to model our lives on a model that was also programmed by someone else's ideas. And so to even begin to explore what satisfaction is for you can be terrifying. But it can begin with really, really simple things, as I often talk to people about. Do you even like the shower gel that you're using? Do you like the smell of it? Do you like that buckle? Does that bra fit? You know, like, just,
wow. I know, and it is a wow, because I mean, one of the things I used to say a lot is stop doing shit you hate with people who bore you, or the other way around, like stop doing stuff that bores you with people you hate. It's like, what the fuck? Why have you spent so many years saying yes to this?
Yeah, totally. I totally get that. And I think that's the thing also, that when we become, you know, self-resourced, when we become self-sourced, when we realize actually that we're working as a co-creator, when we realize we are not all of source, we are an extension, I would offer, a hand of the goddess, if you will, and a finger of the great mother, you know, or a heartbeat of mother nature, then we realize that actually we are doing it together and we're part of a chorus. And that for me was hugely helpful when I was crossing thresholds, you know, which absolutely, as I was saying, you know, did happen through the ministry training. And then definitely coming into 40, you know, when I turned 40, I just thought, oh, this is interesting. And then, you know, when I was like, oh, gosh, something different happens here. I can actually say that people younger than me are kids or youngins, or, you know, there was stuff that started to happen and I would be like, oh, this is brilliant. You know, like the granny in me had waited years to be able to say that. And then at 42, which my 7-year-old self had told me would be my sorted age, unquote, I just suddenly, I was like, she was wise and she's with me so much, you know, I just kind of suddenly felt that there was this opportunity to begin to explore what these are my middle years. I have crossed into what is referred to as our summer in crossing thresholds. I have bloomed, or I am blooming, which again is archetypally dismissed through patriarchy. Because patriarchy wants to keep all women in the bud so that we are infantilized our entire life. So when a woman begins to bloom, she is extraordinary. Similarly, when a man begins to bloom, when man moves from page to king and woman moves from maiden to queen, preparing for both of our autumns, known as the enchanted years, perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, and then into empress and emperor, but also crone, mage, maven, elder, council of the grandmothers. If we are awake to all of those seasons and we live all of them, we will not get to the end of our lives and think, I never chose myself, I didn't live. And as a minister, as a reverend, my great thing is to say, choose your life now, you will die. You know, choose your life now. You know, it does not mean being this insane rebel that just sticks their middle finger up to everything and without sovereignty or without reverence, but it means allow yourself to bloom. Allow yourself to be reborn every day. Allow yourself that to know that there is a version of adult that is extraordinary and can change worlds. And if you have people around you that doesn't make any sense to, maybe one day it will. If it makes sense to you and you feel it in your bones, you know, welcome. Welcome, welcome. Because the crossing thresholds into a reverential adulthood of a personal wealth as a self-sourced individual is a leading edge co-creation place that it is so full of synchronicity and consistency and goodness that your life just exponentially changes. And really all you're doing is saying yes, 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 no thanks, that's bullshit, yes.
Oh, I love you.
I love you too. Thank you for this.
If people want to come and find out more about you, about the work that you do in the world, if they would like more threshold crossing teachings, reverency to enter their world, so where's the best place for them to come?
So the website is gaillovshock.com, and you'll find lots of information on there. And also on Instagram, I think I'm gail_lovshock for daily medicine.
Perfect. We will put all of Gail's links in so that it's very, very easy for you to click through and go find her and chat with her and play and keep up with what's going on in her world. Will you do an I'm an adult, but with me?
Yes, I will. I am an adult, but I recently bought a very bright blue football to kick around for total fun, even though I am horrendous at football.
I now have an image somehow of you in a matching blue hat and a matching blue skirt kicking your blue football around. Oh, wonderful. I love that. Today, where am I? I am an adult. But I get into the swimming pool at the moment as if I were a seven-year-old, which is mostly screaming and wailing, but also refusing to not get in. It's so cold right now that I'm like, what, listening to all the noises that come out of my body as I attempt to get into cold water is hilarious. And it feels very un-adult, because the adult me would, in my head, do it quietly and, you know, gracefully and beautifully. It's not the reality at all.
Not today. I love that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for this conversation and for coming and joining me. And yeah, I could talk to you all day.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening, for sharing, for rating and reviewing. If you have enjoyed this free content, please take a moment to rate us, to share an episode, to spread the word on social media, or to come find me on Instagram and tell me what you thought. On Instagram, I am @EbonyAllard, and I will see you in the DMs. Bye.